Good day to you. Welcome to another edition of The Front Page on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Chuck Meraz. Today we have Belinda Mycock along with Angela Zeke from Legal Aid of the Bluegrass from here in Morehead with us on the show. And first of all, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We've got a lot to talk about today, and I guess we'll start, and Angela, I believe you'll be taking the lead role on this, kind of explaining what you do over there, and I guess you're sort of a department inside a department in some ways, right?
We are. Legal Aid of the Bluegrass is a nonprofit organization. We have an office in Morehead and one in Ashland, as well as one in Lexington and in Covington. We provide free civil legal services to individuals. The long-term care ombudsman program is located within Legal Aid of the Bluegrass, and we provide services to residents living in long-term care facilities such as nursing homes and personal care homes in a 10-county region. If you're familiar with the area development districts, we cover the five counties within the Gateway region and the five counties in the FiveCo region.
So what types of services do you provide to them?
As a long-term care ombudsman, we are advocates for residents. We are there to inform them of the rights that they have under the federal law as being a resident within a facility. We also advocate on their behalf if there's an issue that they're having. We work with the facility administration to resolve those concerns. Or it could also be an issue that involves a family member or Medicaid or Medicare, which are the payer sources for people living in long-term care settings.
Melinda, I don't want to leave you out of the conversation. Since you were nice enough to come over and visit with us. But I'm wondering, the thing that you just told me, Angela, I'm wondering if a lot of people don't realize that they have access to a program like yours, that there's something out there that can help them when they run into some kind of a jam.
That's where public education comes into play. The ombudsman works with interagency meetings that involve either your county agencies, or we have regional meetings that involve agencies like Office of Inspector General, the Attorney General's office, those in the Medicaid office. But we work with families, residents, the staff in the facilities, educating them of who we are and what we do. We have posters hanging up in each of our facilities with our contact information. We try to provide welcome packets to new residents to explain to them what the ombudsman program is, the services that we provide, and give them information and tools to help them if there is an issue.
How important is this program? Is it used often, and what types of problems? I know I'm asking a lot of questions at mm-hmm. one time, but how often are you called in, and what types of problems do you deal with?
Well, we are required to visit each facility at least once a quarter. We often receive phone-in complaints or complaints while we're out at the facilities. Issues really range. It just depends on where the facility is located and what type of facility it is. Family members may have issues where they're not understanding what's going on in the facility.
We have roughly 25 facilities within our 10-county service region.
Which that seems like a lot.
It is, and it consists of about 1,800 residents. So our goal is to make sure that we're in the facility as much as we possibly can, and we rely on volunteers to help us with this. This is a truly a volunteer-based program. We have the district ombudsman, but we use volunteers to help visit with residents and also to assist with complaint investigation and resolution. So we're on site, I don't want it to seem like all we're doing is looking for bad things that are happening in the facility, because that's not really what we're there for. We're there to be a voice for those who are really the voiceless. You know, people in long-term care facilities are very ill for the most part, and so we're there just to make sure that not only are they getting good care, but they're getting the information that they need about their public benefits, or insurance programs, and connecting them with attorneys if we need them through Legal Aid of the Bluegrass, if they're in need of a power of attorney document, a living will, or if there are other legal issues that may be impacting their ability to have quality of life while they're in that facility, then we link them with the attorney.
I'm curious, do you have to step in at times and help certain residents who they have issues with their mental faculties, that they're not as sharp perhaps as they used to be, or they're having some sort of a issue there? Do you help those folks?
Absolutely. That is one of our priorities, is to step in when there is a resident that may be considered incompetent and they don't have someone to be their durable power of attorney, or they don't have a guardian. So we do have the authority when we work with the state to step in and advocate on their behalf.
And it's pretty interesting, because you probably deal with a wide range of people and mm-hmm. the different types of complaints. I imagine some of them are pretty easy to solve and some are a little more complicated.
Some of them are. That is correct. And sometimes, like Melinda said, we do enlist the help of outside agencies, not only a legal aid attorney, but also the Office of Inspector General. They are the regulatory agency. They're the ones that come in and make sure that people are in compliance with the state and federal laws and continue the licensing process with each facility. And sometimes we do enlist their help in resolving some concerns. But for the most part, the ombudsman do very well with working with facility staff or with family members in resolving the residents' complaints.
I imagine it's very important to involve relatives in the situation to make sure that they're all on the same page and they understand what's going on, so they can also help their family member.
Well, sure, because a resident going into the facility may be competent at that time and they may have a decline in their health. So it's important that the family members understand the processes that the residents are going through, the rights that they have, so that they can then advocate for the residents as well.
Can it be pretty complicated? When you have a family member that you have to put into a residential care facility, that's a pretty traumatic experience for some families.
It can be. What we try to make the families aware of is that even though some of the residents are in now an institutionalized situation, they're still entitled to basic rights. And one of those rights is the right to make bad choices. And so sometimes it's difficult advocating for something that you don't necessarily agree with, but you know that resident has the right to. Mm-hmm. So that can be difficult.
You also have a volunteer program you wanted to speak to today.
Yes, we are currently recruiting new volunteers, and we have at this time a couple of volunteer positions that we're focusing on. One is called a friendly visitor, which really is exactly what it says. It's someone who spends time just visiting with facility residents, being a friend, and spending time and having conversation. The other type of volunteer role that we have, which requires significantly more training, but it's very worthwhile, is certified ombudsman volunteer. And that individual actually can assist with complaint investigation and resolution. So they're there spending time with the facility residents and getting to know the resident, but also if they're seeing issues or they're receiving complaints or concerns from staff that are residents, that they're able to resolve those on their behalf.
I think you brought up a really good point that these people are trained to deal with these situations. You're not just hired and then sent in there.
Absolutely not. We do very well as far as the training process. Our friendly visitor volunteer only requires 2 hours of book learning, book training, but we go out with them and make sure that they're acclimated to the facility and the residents that are there, do introductions to the staff, and our certified volunteer program requires 24 hours of training, and that a lot of that is hands-on at the facility.
The friendly visitor program sounds like a simple job, but it's a very important job, because I've been inside some of these residential care facilities, A lot of times these folks don't have people coming to visit them on a fairly regular basis. They're alone a lot. They need some human contact.
60% of nursing home residents have no one to visit them. 60%.
That's an amazingly bad total.
Yes, amazingly it is.
Bad number.
Yes. Yes.
And it's sad. It's mm-hmm. very sad. So these folks, I imagine, are you looking for any type of person to fill that role? Someone who's outgoing, obviously, and has real people skills?
Oh, most definitely. Someone who is caring and compassionate, dedicated to working with the older population, which we are seeing where there are younger individuals going into facilities due to chronic conditions or traumatic brain injuries. But for the most part, it's typically what one thinks of in a nursing home. It is an older individual, so someone who is caring and compassionate, understanding, patient, just really want to make a difference in someone's life.
Are there certain characteristics you're looking for in one of these certified ombudsmen?
Mm-hmm. We are happy to work with anyone who has the dedication and commitment to become a certified ombudsman. We know that the training requirement is pretty significant. Again, it's the same characteristics as someone as a friendly visitor. And what we have done in the past is, as individuals start as a friendly visitor and they do that for a year or two and they want to move up and make a larger impact in the facility that they're working in, and we're happy to train them, give them the extended training so that they can become a certified ombudsman. But it's the same characteristics of anyone that we're looking for through the Friendly Visitor Program.
If someone would like to volunteer for either of those jobs, how could they get involved?
Well, there's a couple of ways that they can get a hold of us. We have a couple of phone numbers, and we're happy to respond to emails as well. My email address is azeek@lablaw.org, A-Z like zebra, E-E-K at L-A-B like in bluegrass, L-A-W.org.
And mine is mmycock@lab.org. LAW.org. MMYCOCK.
All right. Well, thanks to both of you for coming by. Certainly good luck with the program. It's an important one.
Yes, thank you very much.
Again, we've been joined on the front page by Melinda Mycock along with Angela Zeek from Legal Aid of the Bluegrass. I'm Chuck Mraz on Front Page.
There are many ways to connect with Morehead State Public Radio. Log on to WMKY.org for enhanced regional news, on-demand audio and video, breaking news from NPR, and information on your favorite programs. Get links to Facebook and Twitter while you listen to our live broadcast online, or download mobile apps from NPR and take 90.3 FM with you everywhere. Connect with your community and Morehead State Public Radio. Visit WMKY.org.
Back on the front page, I'm Chuck Mraz. Recently, we had a chance to talk with Kentucky 5th District Congressman Hal Rogers.
Congressman, first of all, thank you for taking some time for us today.
Good to be with you, Chuck.
I know you were in Morehead here recently for the groundbreaking for the new medical pavilion building at St. Clair Regional Medical Center. And as you look at that project, how important is it to this region that is badly underserved by medical professionals?
Well, that hospital has been an absolute godsend for all of East Kentucky for a long, long time. And I was thrilled to be a part of the groundbreaking for that new almost $29 million pavilion that will streamline and centralize care for patients. I'm told that over the next 5 years, that new facility will create the need for about 10 to 15 new physicians, plus another 50 or so healthcare jobs. And so this three-story, 81,000-square-foot facility that will consolidate the Cave Run surgical specialists, Morehead medical specialists, and UK women healthcare clinics. You know, the need for rural hospitals could never be greater than it is right now. According to the Kentucky Department for Public Health, our region is just terrible disease-wise. The prevalence of heart disease in the Appalachian region is 84% higher than the national average. Diabetes, 47% higher. Obesity, 26% higher. Lung cancer, 67% above the national average. So in Appalachia, and indeed in the whole country, in the rural areas especially, we're seeing the overwhelming need for rural hospitals to tackle these sobering problems.
When you talk about rural hospitals, it takes me back to a report that was done about a year ago by State Auditor Adam Edelin. He examined the 66 rural hospitals in Kentucky, and he found the majority of them were struggling financially, and there are about one-third of them in crisis, basically close to redlining and going out of business. And if you would talk about that and maybe what are the stressors, what's causing that problem?
Well, I'm certainly no expert in that area, but in my observations in my district, I mean, we have problems right now all over my district with our hospitals, by and large, most of them in very rural area. And the more rural, the more difficulty it seems they're in. But, you know, we're going through a revolution in health care and the financing of health care. The so-called Obamacare effort is certainly causing difficulties. And the overwhelming incidence of disease that I've just mentioned is flooding these hospitals with really tough, tough cases by the big numbers. And Medicare, Medicaid payouts are just not sufficient to cover the problem.
Let's talk a little bit about the initiative that you and former Governor Steve Beshear initiated back in the fall of 2013, Shaping Our Appalachian Region initiative. And at this point, about 2.5 years later, how do you think things have progressed?
Well, things are stirring and moving, and I'm very pleased with SOAR. It's exciting to see people in our region thinking and rethinking for our future. And there's all sorts of new, interesting ideas that are being discussed now across the entire Appalachian region of Kentucky because of SOAR. The 12 working groups that we have dealing with agriculture and tourism and the broadband cable and so on is causing a lot of discussion and some good projects that are coming out of it. I'm thinking of, for example, I took the chairman of the FCC with Owsley and Jackson counties a while back to let him see what those two small counties, poor counties, have done through the telephone co-op. They now have high-speed, high-capacity cable in those two counties by the local telephone company. And one of the byproducts of that is they've got like 150 new jobs of people doing work from their home for companies like Hertz Rent-A-Car and the like. These are jobs that people can do on the Internet from their home, even maybe they're disabled or shut in. They can still do this kind of work. Those are the kinds of things that SOAR is trying to promote and find and spread.
Is there a certain next step with SOAR after broadband has been completely established in your mind?
Oh, sure. Broadband is only one of the things they're working on. But development of tourist activities, resort communities, retirement communities, adventure tourism, ecotourism, skylines, four-wheelers, all sorts of tourist-related ideas. Further development of state parks, for example, in tourism. Agriculture, SOAR is trying to promote local farmers' markets for people to be able to commercially grow crops and sell them, by and large, locally. All sorts of other activities that are being discussed within SOAR in those 12 working groups. There are literally thousands of people involved in these types of activities. We're planning our next summit on June the 6th in Pikeville at the convention center there. The governor and I will be there, among others. The chairman of the FCC, by the way, will be there. as well as the head of the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, Dr. Tom Frieden, who will talk a lot about, I guess, Zika and other things. But he's been very interested in the health aspects in our district because of the heavy incidence of disease. He's been here, and he's traveled with us through the district with SOAR on the health end of things. So SOAR is working, and it's exciting to see people taking their own future into their own hands.
SOAR, of course, was born out of the idea of trying to help revive a region that's lost so many jobs in the coal industry. And you hear people talk about coal today, and you hear supporters saying it can still be an important energy source for America. And you have others who are saying, well, coal is difficult to mine. It's really dead as an energy source. Maybe if you would address that.
Oh, I don't think it's dead at all. I think we're going to see coal used for a long time to come. We have to. There's no other way to quickly replace coal with other forms of energy production. It will probably not hire as many people as we've been used to. Absolutely, we know that. But it will be here for a good while. And we can't write it off. I'm one of the biggest supporters that coal has had in Congress for a long time. And I will continue to be that. But in the next breath, I have to say that we've got to try to find ways to supplement coal as a source of jobs in our region. And that's what SOAR is all about.
Is there, in your mind, a key to getting the coal industry at least back on track so it is producing some more jobs again and not hemorrhaging jobs?
If I knew the perfect answer to that, I would be king. But you know, the research is ongoing, and I've been able to put money in the federal budget for further research on clean coal, so to speak, ways to burn coal and bury the carbon dioxide that normally comes from it back into the ground, for example. And that's being done at a facility in western Kentucky already and a couple of other places around the country. So I think the way out is to develop clean coal technologies that will allow the burning of coal without the spread of CO2.
Last question for you. I know that there are many people who feel like eastern Kentucky right now is at a crossroads, and it's almost like it's now or never if we're going to get this region back on track. And how do you feel about that?
Well, I think so. We're clearly at a crossroads. That's the reason Governor Beshear and I, and now Governor Bevin and I, have been so intent on making SOAR a viable option for us. It gives us a chance to come together as a community, although it's 40 counties or so. It's a third of the state geographically. It gives us a chance to talk together about regional solutions. No one county is going to be able to solve the problem. It's going to take us all pulling together. And that's the idea of SOAR, is to pool our talent, pool our ideas, pool our energy, and get us all going in the same direction at the same time. And we're seeing some good, hopeful, optimistic results that are taking place already. So we want to be sure that that continues. Some of the high-tech work is already happening there at St. Clair's, the so-called telecare program for patients through the Kentucky Telehealth Network. We can finally connect patients to specialists across the country without the patient having to leave Moorhead or Pikeville or Hazard. And broadband will enhance those efforts with greater capacity and speed. And I'm really thrilled about Moorhead State's Space Science Center. I got involved with them on that probably 15 years ago when we got the money for that big new dish that's now on top of the mountain up there. And that sort of was the beginning of the so-called Space Science Center there at Moorhead State. And I was meeting with the head of NASA, and he mentioned the work being done at Moorhead State. So that's an avenue we need to pursue. But SOAR gives us the chance at this crossroads in time, as the economy of our region is changing very rapidly and dramatically, it gives us a chance to pool our resources and go in the same direction as a region.
Once again, that's Kentucky 5th District Congressman Hal Rogers here on the Front Page. I'm Chuck Meraz. That's all for today. We'll see you next time.